Welcome to RCGP Scotland Presents Generally Speaking. In this, the second episode of the podcast, RCGP Scotland Chair Dr Chris Provan and Deputy Chair Dr Chris Williams discuss the benefits and challenges of working as a GP in remote and rural areas.
Hello, it's Dr. Chris Provan again, Chair of RCGP Scotland. Thanks for your feedback about our previous podcast, and it's been very well received. I'm part of really trying to engage in as many ways as possible with our members. Do let us know if you have any further feedback or thoughts about topics, suggestions. But this time we're talking about everything remote and rural. I'm very much a city boy, so I was able to have a good discussion with Chris Williams, who has great experience in this area and works in Granton and Spey. A few bits of background around this. On the 7th of October, the Health and Social Care Committee published their Remote and Rural Healthcare Inquiry. I'd be unsurprised, really, around some of their current findings around the model of care, not taking into account higher operating costs, poorer digital infrastructure, and the large geographical area involved, an ageing population, and a declining working population. But I know that rural communities can be great places to work, really using all the generalist skills and having a leadership role in the community and working in really a naturally beautiful environment, potentially. But we're calling on the government really to really focus on recruitment, retention and investment again in these areas specific to the rural environment and support training, especially in these areas. So hope you enjoy our discussion, and over to Chris and myself. Today I have with me Chris Williams, you will know as previous chair of RCGP Scotland and now deputy chair in Scotland as well. Chris, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm well today.
Have you come down from Northern Climes today?
I travelled down yesterday. So as with many an early morning start in Central Belt for a meeting, I decided to make my way down with time to spare so that weather and transport last minute changes didn't make my schedule more complicated than it needed to be. So I had a change of a nice bus ride down from Aviemore instead of the train.
Absolutely, because Chris does a lot of travelling about on behalf of the college from all his remote and rural locations, because that's what we're going to talk about today and get Chris's view on remote and rural. I'm a city boy. I work in a city centre practice, and really thinking about the contrast between our backgrounds. One of the varieties of thing you get in general practice is the different types of practice and populations. So, Chris, do you want to tell us about your own personal background, really, in general practice, your kind of career path and what you're doing?
Yeah, so I'm based in one location now, but for a while I had travelled around quite a lot. I had been a SHO in a variety of hospital specialties that were related to emergency care, really, and critical care. And then I decided to take a step in a different direction and get on a GP training scheme, which at the time was the Rural and Innovative Scheme, which took me around the north of Scotland, and it took me to different places. So I went up to Orkney for a year, and then down to Murray in NHS Grampian for a year, and then to NHS Highland, out to Gairloch for a year. And I suppose after that, with a CCT in hand, I went round, did various bits of locuming, did a medical education fellowship, and really sort of juggled a variety of different interests before settling down to some salaried GP work.
So I had the pleasure of attending the RCGP conference in Liverpool. And actually, many GPs there were interested in rural general practice. It's really because of the lifestyle, the environment, the outdoors, being part of a community, and also professionally using all the skills of a GP, including things like minor injuries, things like that. And it's a great place to learn in rural practices. I think we have a fantastic tradition in Scotland of supporting rural general practice, and we need to really be very positive about these practices. So what attracts you to really to remote and rural yourself, Chris?
So initially, I had a skill set that was had a lot of acute elements that I did enjoy the A&E work. I did enjoy being able to patch up minor injuries, to think my way around trauma, and that seemed a good skill set to take to remote and rural. Once I got to live some of the remote and rural work experience, and also the experience of living within the community which I worked, that was that I suppose strengthened some of my ties, and I also tempered some of my expectations about remote and rural, because it's not for everyone, and it's certainly different to city central belt medicine.
It is. I mean, can you give us a kind of definition off the top of your head of rural and remote and island general practice?
Scottish Government have a sevenfold classification scheme round about the proximity of houses to settlements of different sizes, and therefore once you add up the all the locations which a practice covers, then that will tell you where a practice sits on a remote and rural scale. But I would highlight that there is something called the screen machine, and I would say if the screen machine visits your area, then you are remote and rural. So for people who are unfamiliar with the screen machine, it's a mobile cinema. It is a large vehicle which can unpack, so it can come to a car park in a faraway location that doesn't have a regular cinema, and it can unfold to have an auditorium and a screen, so for me that's a simple shorthand way to say whether somewhere's remote and rural.
That's fantastic, Chris. It's nice to see that you guys get to see the cinema in these rural locations. So can you give us an overall current state of remote and rural and island general practice then? What is the state of that nation at the moment?
So I would say that there are large parts of remote and rural general practice that feel threatened in terms of the way that funding is constructed. I think that also in terms of the multiple threats that remote and rural areas face generally, adds to that sense, the precarious nature of things. If a practice in a urban area collapses, it hands back its contract, then there are other practices, there are other organisations that can step in. In remote and rural, that's not the case. It's often really just not practical for another practice to take over the day-to-day running of a surgery of a practice population. And indeed, in NHS Highland, where I work, I think the largest number of board-administered, board-run practices.
Absolutely. And what about the differences in infrastructure and what needs to be in place for remote and rural, Chris? Is it different from my practice, which just has one centre?
So examples of where I've worked before. So Ullapool, you've got a main village or town, and then as a practice that covered quite a large geographical area, there were then two locations that were used as branch surgeries that weren't then well kitted out, and you know, were only visited infrequently. And in terms of being able to get around the practice area, as with many other practice areas, that the roads are smaller, they are twistier, windier, so small distances that might look relatively small on a map might take a lot longer to get across. And for large parts of Scotland, of course, during the tourist season, you can then add in the difficulty of navigating those roads with a large amount of traffic, not well suited to those roads, with drivers that are unfamiliar with the local area.
I mean, as far as having actual premises, up-to-date premises, which is kind of connected for data and things like that, how is that doing overall, Chris?
It fits with the issues with remote and rural life in general, that the broadband speeds that you get in the central belt are not the same as you get on the peripheral parts of the mainland and onto the islands. I would say that properties in general, the premises, are in a poorer state, as with much of the primary care estate. And I think in terms of some of the other IT issues, yes, I think everywhere in primary care, everywhere in general practice, has suffered from a cumulative lack of investment over the years.
Absolutely. And there's been a big push through the contract and in general around the multidisciplinary team. And how does that differ really in a remote and rural kind of situation, do you think, Chris?
I would say that the solutions have to be different. If you're looking at a smaller population, a smaller practice population, if you're looking at a more distributed practice population and one that is further from some of the population centres, then, yeah, when you're staffing for that, you have to then think, how does a fraction of a working week get allocated? How much of that needs to be done face to face, in person, within the practice? What support can be delivered remotely? How does holiday cover or other types of leave actually work out? So I think there are some interesting remote ways of working, but I think we have to acknowledge that this is different from some of the team-based working that we see.
Yeah, and we have to think about, are there any kind of structures and contract moving forward really about the differences of rural, presumably? And you've touched on already about practice closures and handing back contracts. How widespread is that in more remote, rural and island areas, Chris?
I've touched on before that within Highland, there are the largest number of board-managed practices. And currently, I think Grampian and Highland are undergoing exercises to gauge whether there is interest from organisations to take those practices over, so that they no longer become board managed, so that they again become run by independent contractors. But I think if those practices had become board managed because of the financial issues round about managing them, about running them, either because of location, because of other factors, then that might still be prohibitive.
So how do you attract GPs and other staff members and everything? What helps in this situation, do you think, Chris, to attract people to rural locations?
There's an argument round about remote and rural general practice being a really good learning environment. And I think often the pace is such that you, while there's still a significant workload to get through, that you can incorporate new learners, be they students, be they general practice specialty trainees, be they from other healthcare disciplines. And generally, I would say that the practice population is welcoming of these individuals, and affords, understands that the place of learning within these environments. And so overall, there can be a very good educational experience with good learning outcomes. And I think that's a good introduction to people to what remote and rural can offer.
So I think you've also had some experience of working on islands, Chris. What were the kind of unique experience and challenges of Orkney and Egg, would you say?
Orkney, the challenges, I suppose, were round about having a large, what they called mainland population, lots of islands scattered around. It's an archipelago. And some of those islands had moved from having a permanent resident GP to having somebody there part of the time, or to moving to having a different practitioner leading things. And when you've got small populations of less than 100, say, then that would present quite a significant obstacle to keeping your skills up. So they had tried on Orkney different ways of bringing peripheral GPs into work in the hospital as part of the acute medical team. But in the background, the island population was needing to go through a period of change in terms of accepting what was going to be a resident service and what would be arranged via a boat or other emergency transport, and transporting a patient sometimes into to the doctor rather than the doctor to the patient.
Yeah, I was just thinking, because I work in a city centre, what I think of as a relatively economically deprived practice. How does the inequalities kind of situation impact in a rural setting?
Looking at the urban areas, it's easy to see areas that have got a large population with a similar level of poverty. Looking at the remote and rural areas, the postcodes can cover larger areas, but quite a more diverse range of economic backgrounds. And so the traditional ways that we have got of looking at health inequalities on a map, I don't think really show some of the more extreme parts of the health inequalities that affect remote and rural.
Absolutely. So you're obviously like working in a more remote and rural environment, Chris. So how do you see the future going forward? Because it's something that we really need to think about, and you've mentioned about the differences. And how do you feel the future of remote and rural and island general practice?
In some ways, that depends on where the Scottish GP contract goes, whether there can be things that are built in to show that there is protection there for the range of different work that goes beyond some of the work in urban settings, and the work that has to occur by virtue of the location, by virtue of the duration of transport to get to a to a hospital that means that there's, you know, inefficiencies in transporting someone you know, by road for certain tests or treatments or care. And I do wonder where some of the comfort I take in the future of remote and rural is based around ScotGem, for example, and around educational programs that have been able to capitalize on the educational environment in remote and rural. But as with other educational environments, as with our clinical work, we need the real estate, you know, we need the premises, we need the amount of space to accommodate our learners. And in remote and rural, this also extends to where somebody stays, you know, while they're on a placement. So it can be one thing to have space within the practice to allow a student or a trainee to see patients and to be briefed and debriefed. But they also need somewhere to, you know, to stay during the week or for a series of weeks, or in the case of a GP trainee, for 6 or for 12 months. And so, you know, accommodation, I think, is a big factor that still we need to solve in remote and rural medicine.
Certainly, I know that one of the most popular things in Grampian is the medical students going to visit a rural practice, and we need to feed into that because it's really a very interesting environment to work in. Thanks, Chris. I've learnt a lot from somebody who works half a mile from a big major hospital. I've learnt a lot. I think we need to think about rural and remote practice right at the beginning when we're thinking about the future of general practice and not as an add-on, as perhaps it has been in the past, and how we can support people working in these kind of environments going forward. So thanks very much, Chris. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the second episode of Generally Speaking, the RCGP Scotland podcast. Be sure to follow us on social media to stay up to date with all of the working news from across the college.